This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
It is a lovely spring day. Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And we have a very busy studio today. Tom Schroyer, our host on the program, each and every week. Tom, hello.
Good morning or good afternoon, Steve. Great to be here again. We do have a great program here today. In fact, a very special program, as our listeners know from time to time, as we feature on behalf of Moss and Barnett, we feature public interest programming. And today we have a very special program because this is the month of April, which is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so here with me today as my co-host is Susan Rode, co-chair of Moss and Barnett's Family Law Practice Group. And Susan, I know that this is an area that you are very interested in and active around. And so this is a very special program for you as well.
It is, Tom. This is a very serious topic, one that certainly has been in the newspaper over the last two or three days as we've witnessed some children certainly at risk. And it is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. So for our listeners, if you see individuals wearing a blue ribbon, or if you see blue ribbons in trees or on cars, that is part of the Blue Ribbon Campaign to Prevent Child Abuse, which was actually started by a grandmother whose grandson was killed by child abuse. So certainly give a nod to those folks. And so today we are really blessed to have two great guests, people who work with children who have been abused and neglected in both preventing and helping that from occurring. And they're going to talk to us today about how to prevent child abuse, how we can all in the community work in that area, and then how we can help children who have been abused and neglected. And our two guests today, Tom, are first of all Diane Hines. And Diane is an attorney who works extensively as a guardian and representing guardians in juvenile court, has just started a new juvenile court mediation program, and is known really across the country for the work she does with children who have been abused and neglected and children who are in foster care. And our other guest today is Kathy Ruland, who has stepped out of her comfort zone in the last couple years. She is an international attorney and certified public accountant, and now is helping us in Friends of Children to work and help children in long-term foster care. And today we're going to hear a little bit about how to help these kids, and then we're also going to hear about Friends of Children and what everyone in the community can do to help these children as we go forward. So welcome to both of you. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yep. Thank you, Susan.
Diane, you're the one with the statistics, so I'm going to start with you. How widespread a problem is child abuse?
Well, child abuse is a national problem, and it cuts across all demographics. It cuts across all economic positions in our society. But in 2008, which is the latest data that we have for Minnesota, approximately 5,400 children were found to have been abused or neglected. That is not the number of children who were the subject of reports. This is the number of children who were actually found to have been abused or neglected. And of these children, the median age is a little bit less than 6 years old, so we are talking about very young children. 70% of the alleged offenders or perpetrators of the abuse were the parents of the children, and another 10 or 12% were immediate family. So we are talking about small children suffering from abuse or neglect in the really intimate relationships of their homes.
You use the phrase always abuse and neglect. Are those two separate things?
Those are two separate things, and Minnesota law defines them. Essentially, abuse, physical abuse, is an unexplained injury to a child that is other than accidental. So that would include hitting or striking or something that simply it goes beyond reasonable discipline and is not explained by the history that is provided by the caretaker of the child. Neglect is, I think, sometimes more ambiguous, but it really is a failure to provide the child with food, clothing, shelter, necessary supervision given the age of the child. And it's a little bit harder to necessarily identify, but it is also true that 70% of the children who are found to be abused or neglected are actually found to be neglected, not abused.
Yeah, I was just watching TV this morning, and there was a mother charged with neglect of her 2- and 3-year-old. They found them wandering in the woods in their diapers, had wandered away from home. So, I mean, just really at-risk kinds of circumstances
exactly.
we're talking about.
Exactly. And so there you would have children who are young enough that they should not be alone, unsupervised, certainly not in the woods. And for this kind of weather, being out alone in their diapers is obviously not appropriate clothing. And so it's those kinds of things that bring a lot of children into child protection.
You know, I think, Diane, that people are really reluctant to report these things and get involved. And, you know, so many times we hear of stories where, gee, if I had just said something. What are some of the signs that we should all be looking for about abuse and neglect?
Well, I think with neglect, we'll start with neglect since that is the most prevalent. If you see a child who, for instance, is not appropriately clothed, wearing a sweater in the middle of a 0-degree weather storm, that is a child who perhaps the parents are not paying attention. Children who are absent from school repeatedly without any good reason provided by the parents. Children who appear to be hungry or hoarding food or asking other adults to provide them with food or money. Children who report that there's no one in their home to take care of them. These could be signs that these children are being neglected. Children who appear to be left alone without supervision or report that they're caring for younger siblings in the absence of a parent. With respect to physical abuse, bruises, injuries to a child that simply don't seem to fit with the explanation that may be given by a child. If a child says that he fell down the stairs but he's got welts across his back, that probably is not the result of having fallen down the stairs. So people who are in close contact with children and family members and members of the concerned community have to be alert. Children themselves will probably not say what has happened to them, but there are signs. They may be afraid to go home. They may be very stiff and guarded around adults. It takes a watchful eye, but certainly if you have a gut instinct that a child is being abused or neglected, you may well be right.
You know, what do I do if I suspect that? For our listeners, if you think that there are children being left alone, for example, in the house next door, what do you do?
Well, every county in Minnesota has a social services agency that is charged with receiving and investigating reports of suspected child abuse or neglect. And what a concerned person can do is to find the phone number for that county agency, call the county agency, provide the name of the child, the name of the caretaker, and enough information that the county social worker can at least understand what's going on. From there, the county social worker will investigate, will contact the parents, will make a determination about whether maltreatment, as it is called, has occurred, and then may offer the parents voluntary services to help correct the conditions if that's appropriate. And as a last resort, perhaps a juvenile court case would be instituted.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about what happens if a juvenile court case is instituted and what happens to children from there.
All right, very good, Susan. Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer co-hosting today, Kathy Rulin and Diana Hines from Friends of Children. What can you do to help abused and neglected children in your neighborhood? It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss and Barnett attorney G. Aaron Youngquist was the lead trial attorney in the successful prosecution of Al Scarface Capone and then personally argued the tax evasion conviction to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. www.friendsofchildren.com. Susan Rowe, Tom Schroer co-hosting, Kathy Rulin and Diane Hines from Friends of Children. What you can do to help abused and neglected children in your neighborhood. A very important topic today, Susan.
It is, Steve. And Diane, we were just talking about what happens if I suspect someone, a child has been abused, and that I should call the agency in my county and report that. Do I have to give my name when I do that?
Well, you do have to give your name, but the law does provide that those names are confidential. And if you are reporting in good faith, that's really what you need to be concerned with. What is not appropriate is to be fabricating reports or to be making them up to get back at the parents. But good faith reporters are shielded, and their names are not released to the parents during the pendency of the investigation.
So if the county investigates and if the county finds that there is suspected abuse or neglect, what will happen next to the children?
Well, the county may decide that the children are safe to remain in the home and that the parents are interested in engaging in a voluntary plan to help them address particular problems that may have given rise to the report. It may be that they need help getting food stamps or food in the home. It may be that they need help finding clothing or other services that would help them. But if, in fact, the county determines that the children are not safe in the home and the parents are not going to be able to voluntarily take steps to make the home safe, the children may well be removed. And within 72 hours after the removal of the children, the family will be before a juvenile court judge. A petition will have been filed by the county social services agency alleging that the children need protection or services, and the judge will hear that within 72 hours.
So if a county agency says these kids are at risk, who goes out and picks the kids up?
Very often the social workers will go out. Occasionally law enforcement will be involved.
So these kids are removed from the home very quickly.
They are removed from the home very quickly when the situation is that dangerous.
But then the parents' protection is within 72 hours, a judge is going to consider that.
That is correct. That is correct.
And what happens at that hearing? What does the judge have to decide at that hearing?
Well, at that hearing, which is the first hearing in a juvenile court case, several issues will be decided. The primary one will be whether the children will remain out of the home or whether it is safe for them to go back to the home. Judges can return the children under protective supervision or under some other conditions that seem to guarantee the safety of the children in the home. If it is determined that it simply is not safe for the children to return home, then a decision will be made that the children will remain in foster care. And Minnesota law requires that the county then make every effort to place the children with family. And so it might be that a grandmother is identified at that point in time who may be able to take the children or some other relative. And then as the process goes on, then the children may well be moved to the relative's home. The parents, if they're eligible for a public defender, will be appointed a public defender. And there will begin to be at that stage some discussion of what it is the parents are going to have to do to remedy the conditions that brought the children into child protection and what they need to do in order to get their children back in their home.
But it sounds like parents really are given every opportunity to try and make things right and to correct what's wrong, and the kids are put in a safe place in the meantime.
That's correct. I mean, the law requires that the parents be given services that will help them to get their children back. That is the first priority of child protection proceedings. And so the parents will be given a case plan that sets out very specific tasks that they may that they need to do. They may have to get into therapy. They may have to undergo chemical dependency treatment. They may have parenting classes they need to attend. But the effort, the primary effort, is to reunify the children with the parents and do so within a limited time frame. The parents have essentially about a year to get everything set, and because obviously children cannot remain in foster care forever.
And what happens if the parents can't make a go of it, if they can't correct the problems with the child?
If they cannot correct the problems with the child and they are not themselves, they have not themselves come to the position of recognizing that and agreeing that their children should perhaps go live with relatives permanently or be adopted by relatives, then there will be a trial to terminate their parental rights. And the county must prove that that these parents are unfit parents, and assuming that that happens and a child is freed for adoption, then efforts will be made to facilitate the adoption of the child by a family member first, and if that's not possible, then by someone who is not related. Some children do not get adopted and grow up in foster care, and that is where the Friends of Children Foundation comes in, because it is these children who are living in foster care that the foundation serves.
And so after our break, Steve, I would hope that we could talk to Kathy a little bit about Friends of Children and how we can all help children who are in long-term foster care, those kids who are not getting adopted, need our help.
We have a brief news and weather break coming up momentarily. Susan Rhoda and Tom Schreier co-hosting today. Kathy Rulin and Diane Hines from Friends of Children. What you can do to help abused and neglected children in your neighborhood. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Available online at moss-barnett.com. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios in downtown Minneapolis, this is 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Available online at moss-barnett.com. The show comes your way each and every Saturday at noon. And today, what you can do to help abused and neglected children in your neighborhood. Kathy Rulin and Diane Hines from Friends of Children are in studio. Our co-hosts today, Tom Schreier and Susan Rhode.
Hi, Steve. Welcome back. Diane, before we left, you were painting a picture that is really pretty dramatic if you stop and think about it, where you can have a very small child, let's say 6 years old, that's picked up from his home by a social worker or a police officer, put in foster care. And if the parents can't get their act together, essentially, and meet the criteria the judge sets, that child may never be reunited with those parents and may be put into permanent other care, third-party care.
Well, Susan, that's true, sometimes it's not quite as bleak as it seems because, as I said, every effort will be made to reunify the parent and the child. And then the secondary fallback position would be, is there someone in the family who can raise this child in lieu of the parents? And so many children do remain in the larger family system, even if they are not being parented on a day-to-day basis by their parents. But there are children who grow up in foster care, and I think those stories are particularly sad. A six-year-old child should not grow up in foster care, but the truth is that we have hundreds of children in our community who do grow up in foster care and who leave foster care not because they're adopted, but because they age out of the system. They become too old for foster care. And nationally, this is a group that is getting increasing attention from child advocacy groups because the general outcomes for children who grew up in foster care are bleak. They have, as young adults, they have higher rates of homelessness, higher rates of early parenthood, higher rates of criminal activity and incarceration. They have lower rates of completing post-secondary education. And if you simply think about whether in our community, children at 18 are left to be on their own and fully emancipated from their families, the answer is no. But as a foster child, that may be what happens. You are turned loose at 18. So that is an area of great concern.
So the county would take care of these kids and make sure they have a roof over their head and food and someone taking care of them until age 18, and then they're just done and they're on their own?
Essentially, they are. Some children can stay in care until 19, and there are now some provisions for kids to stay in care until they're 21 and finishing their education. But as a practical matter, if a child would like to leave foster care, they are able to do that. And, you know, many do maintain ties with their foster parents, and that might be where they go to spend Christmas or Thanksgiving. But many of them have not seen their own biological families in years and may not want to go back to their foster parents as resources. And this is a group that really we all have to pay attention to.
And, Kathy, that's where Friends of Children comes in. I think that's how we got you away from international law and accounting, is by hearing these stories of these children that are in long-term foster care. And can you tell us a little bit about what Friends of Children is about and what attracted you to Friends of Children?
Great, Susan. Thank you very much, and thank you, Diane. The Friends of Children Foundation, we're a nonprofit organization, and we're committed to improving the lives of children in foster care. We provide grants, usually up to about $500 per child per year, to address needs that they wouldn't ordinarily have if they're in foster care. And so these are enrichment-type grants, and they're to be used for things over and above of what foster parent payments would normally go for. So, for example, we make grants for a summer program, for camps, for the YMCA, for basketball camps. We make grants for tutoring, for computers, for all those things that enrich a child's life in foster care that they may ordinarily not have a chance to participate in.
So what I'm hearing you say, Kathy, is that kids in foster care really don't have any money or anyone that pays for any of the things that we would normally purchase for our children.
No, that's oftentimes is the case. I mean, the things we take for granted, our kids playing baseball in the summer or having a bike or being able to participate in after-school sports, these are the kind of requests that we get from foster parents, from guardians ad litem, even from relatives that are looking for a little additional help to sort of enrich the lives of children in foster care.
It just seems incredible to me to think about these kids who are already not in their own home or with their own parents, who have these risks that Diane described, and then they don't have any of the things to help them fit in within their school and their community. I'm thinking of things like prom dresses or class rings or school pictures. Does any of that get paid for by the county?
It's one of the areas that we step in and are able to provide funds for that. So prom dresses in the spring are a frequent request, or a tux rental, or even things like orthodontia that may not be covered by the county. I think there's Diane probably can speak to this better than me, but it has to be for a real medical need before funds would be provided for something that, again, many children take for granted as far as getting braces. So these are the sorts of wonderful things that we can do. And I have one example that I think really hits home, and that was where a young girl wanted to go on a school trip, a high school girl, to France with her class. We were able to provide funding up to $500, and she stepped in and she earned the rest of the money. And I think one of the best letters that we ever received, and we get some really heartwarming letters, is she thought because she was in foster care that she would, you know, never be able to travel, never be able to go outside the U.S. And this really changed her thinking. And I think it's that sort of long-term benefit that that we're hoping to provide for these children.
And also for kids who are going off to college, there's a lot of benefits, too, in terms of these are kids no one pays for their SAT test or their ACT test, as I understand. And there's no county funding for going to look at colleges.
That's right. And we do get grants requests for that, and we make grants for that to visit colleges, to take an ACT prep course, to help them with tutoring, the computers. I mean, a lot of our children and high school students sort of take it for granted that they'll be going, you know, packing up their new computer on their way off to college. And that's something that we're able to help with, and that we're very proud to be able to help those children kind of take the next step.
There aren't a lot of other opportunities for children to get this type of help, are there, Kathy?
No, I think this is a very unique program. It's one that our donors are committed to, that we work hard to raise additional funds to be able to provide these sort of enrichment opportunities that they may otherwise not have the chance to experience.
Diane, can you think of any other unique grants that you've given or different things that kids have needed help with?
Well, we do give grants to children to remain connected to their cultural heritage. For instance, we have made a series of grants to Native American children to buy ceremonial dance regalia, because a key community activity is to dance in powwows. And these outfits can be very expensive, well beyond the means of foster parents to pay for them. And we've made several grants for kids to do that, and that's a way that they can participate in community activities that are so critical and important to their identity. We also do make grants for African-American children to have hair braiding, because that is something that is closely tied to their cultural heritage and to their ability to sort of see themselves as strong members of the society. So we make grants of that sort. I think that we're very open. I mean, one of the things that we request is that a child over the age of 12 add to the application made on his or her behalf his or her own statement about why I want this grant and how is this going to help me. And I think those are some of the most wonderful letters that we receive, because children are very, very certain about what they hope to get out of some of our grants, the experiences that they're going to have. And often the experiences are ones that help them maintain sort of their own sense of being and well-being in foster care. We get children who've played, for instance, varsity sports at their school in the community in which they've lived with their parents, and then they're moved to another community to be in foster care, and there may be fees involved, and we've been able to then pay those fees so they can continue to play the sport that is so important to their own sense of self.
And I think one of my favorite programs that Friends of Children has done in the past is the Picture Me Day, which is for kids in long-term foster care, older kids who are looking to be adopted, where Friends of Children coordinates with the state colleges to put together a program to help them with good pictures, to have makeovers, and to just really give them a sense of hope, to put them on a college campus. And that's just been a great program. When we come back from the break, Steve, I know that Diane and Kathy are going to have some real good ideas for us about how everyone that's listening today can help these kids and this very special group of kids that need our help.
What a great topic today. Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer, co-hosting the program today, Kathy Rulin and Diane Hines from Friends of Children, what you can do to help abused and neglected children in your neighborhood. We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
WCCO, now available crystal clear on 102.9 WLTE HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Welcome back one more time to Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Susan Rode and Tom Schroyer are co-hosting the program today. Friends of Children, representing Friends of Children, Kathy Rulin and Diane Hines in the studio. Susan.
Thank you, Steve. And Diane, we were talking just at the end here about what we can all do in the community to help this very special group of children. Do you have some suggestions for our listeners today about things that they might be able to do?
You know, I do. I have some suggestions about how to help parents that you think may be struggling with parenting. You can offer to help with the children by babysitting or helping them learn some new techniques to deal with children. Obviously, if you're a grandmother, parents frequently will welcome that kind of help, because sometimes parents just don't know what to do, and your own experience might be helpful. You can provide support to organizations that provide parenting classes. You can provide support to the children themselves by talking to them, by being around them, by encouraging them to talk to you and develop a good relationship with you. You can help parents manage the stress that often leads to neglecting their children. So becoming personally involved with family, I think, is very important. Kathy's going to talk a little bit about how you can support through the Friends of Children Foundation, but there is also another significant volunteer opportunity in at least Hennepin County, which is you can become a volunteer guardian ad litem. And this would be somebody who would be appointed by the court to advocate for the best interests of children who actually are involved in child protection proceedings. And that's a very important role. It might be a role you might do another program on sometime, but Kathy will talk about finding information about the Guardian Ad Litem program on the foundation website.
Great. Kathy, talk to me about what our listeners can do to help Friends of Children.
Well, terrific. We would love to have their help, and we have a lot of different opportunities. The first thing is to volunteer with us. We to have ideas about raising money, to help us out with Picture Me Day, to participate in the board. We're very open, and it's an energetic group and committed really to helping these children in foster care. Our website is easy to remember, www.friendsofchildren.com, and our website can lead you through how you can volunteer, how you can make a donation, which you can do right online. And also, we also have a application to be a volunteer guardian ad litem. And again, this is where some of the real valuable and the tough work is done. And so if you check out our website, and we'd love to hear from you, and any support you might be able to lend would be greatly appreciated and, of course, put to very good use.
And we also, for our listeners, have a link to that website on our Minnesota Law website. So please look either place for us. And I really encourage listeners, you know, this is something that I got into several years ago through Diane, and I didn't know anything about foster care and really thought I couldn't do anything to help in this regard. And I've been amazed by the energy of the people coming together to do this. And you don't have to hear very many stories about these kids and about the risks that they're at and the challenges that they face, and then to hear just how incredibly courageous they are. And I always remember, Diane, the story of the young lady who had been horribly abused and neglected, and I think we paid for her to get a class ring. And she wrote a letter that said, "I'm a lucky, lucky girl." And I don't think any of us would have defined her as life as lucky. And yet it's some of these small acts that we can help them with, and just small gifts, and it makes such a huge difference in their life and how they view how other people are going to treat and help them. And I just can't impress enough how important our work is.
You know, I had a question, Susan, for Diane, and that is, it sounds like Minnesota has a number of great programs going, a lot of protection. How do we stack up compared to other states in the country?
Well, I think Minnesota, like all other states, is facing some significant budget cuts, and we have certainly seen that in the child protection area. You know, workers are facing probably, you know, an increasing need for children to have services. Services are being cut. There are waiting lists for parents who, even if they want to attend to the programs that they're supposed to participate in, they can't always get into them right away because there are waiting lists. So I think we are, you know, we are doing about the same as other states in the country. Minnesota has always had a very progressive social services system. But the federal government does audit child protection programming, and certainly there have been areas that there's room for improvement in. Markers such as how long does it take for a child to be adopted, how long does it take for a child protection case to run its course, how often do children leave child protection and come back in, which would suggest certainly that something was not fixed the first time around. So I think, you know, Minnesota's holding its own, but these are very significant problems that the community faces, and these children have been largely invisible. And I'm just so grateful that you all have hosted this program today, because it really highlights the needs of these most vulnerable of the children in our community.
All right. Well, an outstanding program today. I've learned a lot. Kathy Rulin, Diane Hines from Friends of Children, Susan Rode, Tom Scheuer co-hosting the program today. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Go to the website moss-barnett.com. Next week, Tom, the program?
Steve, we're going to have Tony Merrick with us next Saturday on Minnesota Law. Tony is a shareholder in Moss and Barnett, and we'll be talking about raising equity financing for small to medium-sized businesses, startups, and ongoing businesses. So it'll be a great program.
All right, very good. That is next week. It is Minnesota Law each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Enjoy a lovely day.